chapter 10, texts 4 and 5. It's got a long commentary. I might have to take advantage of it. It's my first talk in America, and it takes me a while to get used to speaking only in English. Everyone knows, who knows I go through this every time I come back. I've been away for a long time. I'm used to speaking in fragments. And now I have to speak continuously. Everybody usually says, well, then you'll have to spend more time in America. But I have no answer for them on that one.
Do you speak Russian?
I do speak, yeah, but I don't lecture in Russian. I'm not fluent, only very, very basic conversation, very basic. And but I speak with a translator all the time. So sometimes if in America, and I'm so used to speaking in short segments and then a pause and then thinking in between the next thing I say, I sit somebody in front of me just to repeat what I say. So this is Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, texts 4 and 5. This chapter is the opulence of the Absolute. Buddhir jnanam asamoha, kshama satyam damashama, sukham dukham bhavo bhavo, bhayam chabayam evacha. Ahimsa samatha tushtis, tapo danam yasho yasa, Bhavanti Bhava Bhutanam Mata Eva Pritagvidha. Translation. Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, nonviolence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame, and infamy. All these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone. So, before I begin reading the commentary, this is a chapter entitled The Opulence of the Absolute. And in this chapter, Krishna is explaining to Arjuna how he can be perceived through the various opulences that we experience in our daily life. Because previously in this chapter, Krishna states that he is the origin of everything, the source and the Lord of everything and everyone. Therefore, since everything is ultimately coming from him, then one way we can appreciate his greatness is by seeing how everything that is manifest in terms of opulence is connected to him. So the more we see that, appreciate it, and hear about his opulences, it's like Prabhupada gives the example, just like if you have a friend and you've been with a friend for some time and all of a sudden you find out he's a multi-billionaire. Well, or you might find out something. The more you know him, you hear about him, it's just, wow, he's a multi-billionaire. Immediately increases your appreciation of the personality, you know, because you never knew that about him. So Krishna is doing the same thing to Arjuna here in this chapter, although not in such a mundane sense. But he's actually stating here to Arjuna and for the benefit of everyone who hears the Bhagavad Gita that these various opulences that you perceive in this world, they're ultimately coming from me. And here this verse, he says, all these various qualities of living beings, they're coming, they're created by me alone. So now, this verse only describes these qualities. In other verses in this chapter, Krishna says, like in the previous verse, he says, I am the source of all the demigods and sages. Neither hosts or demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences, for in every respect I am their source. Again, another way. Or he who knows me, next verse, he who knows me is the unborn, as the beginningless, as the supreme lord of all the worlds. He only undiluted among men is freed from sins. And then in this verse. So now we'll read about each of these qualities that Krishna is saying is created by me. And Srila Prabhupada, in his commentary, he's explained these qualities in a way that we can appreciate them in Krishna consciousness. Because just these qualities in of themselves, like any other qualities in this world, in of themselves, the real value of their existence is that it helps one to remember Krishna. The whole essence of Bhagavad Gita is actually to bring one to that conclusion that ultimately everything in this world is connected to him. He is the source, and therefore one who finally comes to that conclusion and sees everything in that way, then they'll be fully dependent upon him. And by constant remembrance of him, Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, in many places, he gives assurance that in that state of consciousness, the devotee becomes happy, self-satisfied, peaceful, and at the time of leaving this world, he achieves the supreme destination. So, therefore, in this commentary, Srila Prabhupada will explain all of these qualities in terms of how they can be appreciated in relationship to Krishna. The different qualities of the living entities, be they good or bad, are all created by Krishna, and they are described here. Intelligence refers to the power to analyze things in their proper perspective. And knowledge refers to understand what is spirit and what is matter. Ordinary knowledge obtained by a university education pertains only to matter. It is not accepted here as knowledge. Knowledge means knowing the distinction between spirit and matter. In modern education, there is no knowledge about spirit. They're simply taking care of the material elements and bodily needs. Therefore, academic knowledge is not complete. There's more. I'll stop. Try to explain a little at a time. Om agyanatim arandasya gananjana salakaya chakshu omuni tamnina tasmai shi gurave namaha mukam karoti vachalam pangam bangayate gurim Yad kripata maham bande shi ganundina taranam nama om vishnu buddhaya krishna pristaya bhutale shimati bhakti vidanta swamaniti namane namaste sarasvati devi gauravani pachanane nivashesha shanyavari vastu chode sitarane jaya shi krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shi advaita gadadhar shi vasari gaura bhakta vrinda hare krishna hare krishna 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 hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Qualities, as Prabhupada said, as be they good or bad, they're all ultimately created by Krishna, and they're being described. First two are intelligence and knowledge. Prabhupada gives a very short definition of intelligence. It refers to the power to analyze things in their proper perspective. And knowledge refers to understanding what is spirit and what is matter. Actually, when I was reading this, it made me think of Prabhupada when he was, in 1969, I think, he gave a lecture at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And he was speaking to faculty and students. I wasn't there, but this is documented. That Prabhupada was speaking to, obviously, persons who are very well trained in science, faculty members of MIT. And he asked him a question in the course of his lecture. He stopped and he asked, "Where in the university are they teaching the difference between a dead body and a living body?" And nobody had an answer. Prabhupada was trying to, in the beginning of his talk, he was speaking about material knowledge and the wealth benefits of material knowledge. And, of course, he began to speak about the spiritual science, and presented the teachings of Lord Krishna as a science, the science of the soul. And explained that how in any type of science, various types of experiments can be performed, and by the performance of the experiments, you can gradually perceive a result that you'll get. He said, in the spiritual science, you should also get a result. And therefore, his talk was specifically directed towards how to realize the self, self-realization, which is a science, which most people do not know the method or the science or the experiments or the procedures to achieve that fruit. And of course, Srila Prabhupada, being in the state of consciousness which he was in, which was always in a transcendental platform, beyond the dualities of this world, his consciousness was not focused simply on the externals of this world, but he was able to see things in true perspective. He had spiritual vision. And therefore, when he asked this question, the faculty and students both were unable to give an answer. It's a challenge. And, of course, maybe these days, in the pursuit of scientific, they'll try to give an answer that as an attempt to explain the symptoms of life and how life comes about. But Prabhupada was explaining in MIT that ordinary knowledge is attained by a university. It pertains only to matter and is not accepted here as knowledge. Therefore, he defines knowledge means to know the distinction between spirit and matter, and who is the controller of both. So that is real knowledge. To be able to see the material and the spiritual. And that spiritual vision, of course, that knowledge, is two types. One is theoretical, jnana, and the other is vijnana, realized knowledge. Itam tute guya tamam pravakshamana suya ve jnana vijnana sahitam yajgatva moksha sheshu. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, jnana vijnana sahitam. He says, because you're never envious of me, I shall impart this knowledge to you, knowing which you will become freed from all miseries of material existence. So Krishna is explaining to Arjuna in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the previous chapter here, what was Arjuna's qualification for achieving or obtaining this knowledge from Krishna. Just as we said, if one is going to perform an experiment, he has to fulfill certain conditions in order to get the result. So Krishna is saying, okay, Arjuna, because you're never envious of me, that's the condition. You're never envious of me, therefore I shall impart this knowledge to you, knowing which you'll become free from all the miseries of material existence. Enviousness, of course, which Krishna is explaining, is because you accept that right from the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, as Arjuna was in a bewildered state of consciousness, and then he told Krishna, Karpanya dosho bhata svaha bhava, says, now I'm completely bewildered about my duty, I've lost all composure due to weakness, and in this condition I'm asking you to please tell me what I am your disciple, soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Arjuna took that position in relationship to Krishna. He accepted Krishna as in the superior position. His knowledge was transcendental, and because his knowledge was transcendental, and Arjuna was experiencing duality, he said, now please remove the duality and allow me to see things from the higher spiritual platform. So Arjuna was not envious. And because he was not envious, he accepted Krishna. Therefore, in this ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is described knowledge which is more confidential. The ninth chapter is, it's most confidential. Most confidential. So why is it most confidential? Because right in the very beginning he says to Arjuna, because you're never envious of me. I shall impart this most secret wisdom, knowing which you should be relieved from all the miseries of material existence. It's like, sometimes if you have a very close friend, and a person knows, well, he's not going to abuse any confidential information about me. He's my friend. So I might tell something to him because he's confidential friend. If he's not confidential, I'm not going to tell him some of the more private things of my life. Like that's made me think of that story, I've told it here before, of a man in the airplane who once told me very confidential things about his life. Right? And then he realized after he told me all these confidential things about his life that he got very angry. He said, you know, why did I tell all these things to you? You're a complete stranger. Didn't realize at the time, you know, what had happened. He thought maybe I had brainwashed him or something like that to spill all everything about. You know. And he was very angry because these were confidential. And he even said to me, he said, I've never told these things to anybody. Never told them to anybody. And here, some guy, I'm sitting next to him on a plane for the first time. And he was angry, tried to understand. You know, why did he disclose these things to a stranger? Of course, finally he realized that afterwards, and after about 3 minutes, I had to sit patiently, thinking that at any moment he could punch me right in the face, because that was the anger he displayed. He was really angry. And then he slapped his hands and smiled, and I was relieved. And I said, he said, that's it. I said, what is it? I said, that's it. That's why I told you these things. And I said, well, what is it? And he looked at me and he said, because you're happy. And that, because he had asked me all the questions. We spoke for 2 hours before that. He was asking all the questions about my life, and I told him, you know, that I'm not married, I don't have, you know, a lot of possessions. I don't have a home. I have any. So he went through all these things. You don't have a wife. You don't have this. You don't have possessions. All your possessions are underneath this plane, and you're happy. That's why I said these things to you. Anyways, that's a whole other story. But the point is that usually a person who doesn't have a confidant, he's not going to disclose things about himself to just anybody, because somebody could take that and use it at some point in the future in a very way that will come back and stab him. So Krishna is saying to Arjuna, I'm going to tell you something confidential about me, this confidential knowledge. And he says, why am I telling you this confidential knowledge? Because you're never envious of me. You're accepted that who I am. You've submitted yourself to me with confidence. And as everything I've told you up until now, you're accepted and inquire deeper into the subject matter. And not challenging. And the result is as there is any kind of a progressive discussion that takes place between somebody who's realized and somebody who's less realized, is the person is inclined to reveal more. It just so happens Krishna, because he's the Supreme Absolute Truth, he has to speak about himself. Nobody else he can speak about. Yes. He's the Supreme Absolute Truth, so therefore he's got to tell Arjuna. Now, I'm going to tell you some more things about me. You want to hear it? These are some things about me. And therefore he starts explaining all this confidential knowledge in the previous chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And now in this chapter, now he's going to say, now you've heard some of these confidential things about me, now I want you to see how I exist, how you can see me everywhere. My opulence. Behold my mystic opulence, as Krishna says to Arjuna. Behold. You can see now for yourself my opulence. And then after he tells him about all these opulences, and in the next chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 11, what does Krishna do? He reveals his universal form to Arjuna. Now look at me. Universal form. He showed how everything in the universe is connected to him. Revealed all to Arjuna. Because he's not envious. So, therefore, this knowledge, this confidential knowledge that Krishna is revealing to Arjuna, as Prabhupada is describing here, knowledge means to know, means knowing the distinction between spirit and matter. And who is the controller of both? Well, Krishna says, of all that is material, all that is spiritual, you should know for certain both its origin and dissolution. Everything is coming from me. Therefore, real knowledge, as Prabhupada explains, means not just matter, because that's not everything. And that's why he challenged at MIT and said, okay, what is the difference between a dead man and a living man? Tell me. But you see, in a dead man, what's missing? But you're not studying what's missing. You have no scientific procedures to study what's missing. Nothing. A big university, so many faculty members, so many buildings, so much research. But why aren't you studying these things? And Prabhupada, of course, left them all speechless. Nothing they could say in his usual style. And then, of course, he continued his talk and drew their attention to something, some relevant knowledge that they should take interest in. So this is knowledge in relationship to Krishna. To study matter is not knowledge in relationship to Krishna. But to know matter and who's behind it. Just like Krishna says, Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyate Sacharam. Anything that you study in this material world, Krishna says, I'm its source, its origin, and dissolution. I'm behind it. Maya Dakshina Prakriti means this material nature works according to my direction. Example is given, just like when the hand moves, the shadow moves along with it. In the same way, material nature works according to Krishna's will. He is the controller behind it. And as he tells Lord Brahma in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says that whatever you see in this world that's separate from me, matter, if you see it of any value but you don't see how it's connected to me, then it's my illusory energy or that reflection which appears in the darkness. And Prabhupada explains that spiritual knowledge is the substance. He says, just like when the sunshine exists, there are two properties that exist dependent upon the sun, their connection to the sun. There is darkness. When the sun is covered, there is darkness. And then there's reflection. Reflection is a projection of the sunlight into the darkness. But they're both dependent upon the sun. They're relative truths in relationship to the sun, which is the absolute in this example. So Krishna is saying, in the absolute sense, I am the source of material and the spiritual worlds. The material world is when spiritual knowledge is covered. Then you see only matter. You can't see spirit. He said, but when you remove the covering, then you could see that actually everything is connected to Krishna. And Krishna goes on to explain the proof that everything is connected to me. Is this too philosophical?
No.
Proof is that even the ability to see something separate from me is coming from me. Even the ability, your ability to see something separate from me, I've given you that ability. And therefore later he says, Matak smita gyanam apohanam cha. Savasya hidi sanavishto matak smita. Yes. What is it? Hidi sanavishto matak smita gyanam apohanam. I'm situated within everyone's heart. And from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The ability to forget is also coming from me. So everything's coming from me. Maya, Krishna says, that's my separated material energy. Bhumera pona lovayu, kamano buddha evacha, ahankara ityane me, vina prakriti ashtada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, the five gross elements, mind, intelligence, false ego, the three subtle elements. So Krishna says, altogether, these are my separated material energies. Aparayam itastvanyam prakritam vidimeparam. But besides this material nature, there's the superior nature, which is the living entity. So Krishna is giving this spiritual knowledge to Arjuna. He's passing it down. The transcendental science is the science, that knowledge which comes down from the spiritual source. And then how is that knowledge realized? Vijnana? This jnana is theoretical. It's all just theoretical until one actually does the experiment. According to the criteria for given in the laboratory, if you mix hydrogen and oxygen, two parts to one part, and you do it the right way, then you get water. So according to the experiment is this, if you want to realize spiritual knowledge, then you have to hear that knowledge from a spiritual source. You have to have faith and submit. And then when you have faith and you submit, free from envy, that knowledge is something that which is coming from a source greater than me. Therefore, I should hear it with faith. And then when one practices it, then what happens? Gradually, it becomes realized knowledge. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the ninth chapter, a very, very important person in this verse, in this connection, ninth chapter, text 2, which is the most confidential knowledge. He says, text 3, Raja Vijaya Raja Guyam Pavitram Itam Udamam Pachakshavagamam Damyam Sushukam Kartam Avyam. He says that this Raja Vijaya Raja Guyam Pavitram Itam Udamam Pachakshavagamam. No, it's text 2. This knowledge is the king of education. Most secret of all secrets is the purest knowledge. And because it gives direct perception of the self by self-realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and is joyfully performed. So Krishna says, here, it says, you'll get direct perception of the self by self-realization. Just by following this science, it gradually becomes revealed. Why? And he explains also in these chapters, how does it become revealed? He says the way it becomes revealed is because I'm situated within your heart also. And for those who try to understand this knowledge, Krishna says, I clear away the doubts from within their heart and I reveal with the shining lamp of knowledge out of compassion for them. Aham agyana jamtama. Krishna says, out of compassion for them, I who dwelling within our hearts distill with the shining lamp, reveal with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So Krishna says, this is how you know it. I reveal. Even the ability to remember me and to know me, it's all happening from within the heart. Krishna is revealing within the heart himself to his devotee. The devotee becomes realized, he becomes happy. He gets direct perception of the self by realization. And then he says, Tesham satatam yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. To those who are constantly endeavoring, worship me with love. So I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. There's no other way to know Krishna than by Krishna's revealing himself. That confidential knowledge means Krishna saying, okay, I'm going to reveal some things to you. But to know Krishna simply by academic knowledge? No, it can't be understood. And many places in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, no, you can study all the Vedas all you want, but you still won't know me simply by studying the Vedas. This is only, you can only know me when I reveal this to you. That's Krishna, that confidential knowledge that he reveals to one who accepts the proper attitude in approaching him. And then it's, Krishna says to Arjuna, only then can you enter into the mysteries of my of understanding to me. He said that in the, what is it, in the 11th chapter, very, very important verses, after Krishna reveals the universal form to Arjuna, he says, the form that you are seeing with your transcendental eyes cannot be understood simply by studying the Vedas, nor by undergoing serious penances, nor by charity, nor by worship. It is not by these means that one can see me as I am. And then he says, very well-known verse, Bhaktya Tvananyasakya, says, my dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So, this is a little bit about knowledge. And intelligence means, as Prabhupada said in the very first part, refers to the power to analyze things in their proper perspective. Proper perspective means to see them from this position that we just described, to distinction between matter and spirit and the controller of both. To analyze things in the proper perspective means to see how Krishna is behind everything. And when one begins to see how Krishna is behind everything, then in the 12th chapter, Krishna says some very, very important things about a devotee who's Krishna conscious. After he reveals the universal form, then Krishna talks about, okay, what these devotees who see things from this proper perspective, they're very dear to me. And he says, excuse me, Bhagavad Gita study today. He says that this intelligence means to see things from the proper perspective. So Krishna says, one who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, and is free from false ego, who is equal both in happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Intelligence fixed. He says, such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. So, he's equal in happiness, distress, free from false ego, he's friendly towards all living beings, he doesn't see anyone as his enemy, he sees things in that perspective. Then he says, he for whom no one is put into difficulty, is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness, distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. And then he says, one who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equal poise in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me. Intelligence means to see things in the proper perspective. And now Krishna is saying, this is the symptoms of a person who sees things in proper perspective. He sees everything connected to Krishna. And therefore, he doesn't see enemies. He sees that, oh, if somebody's causing harm to me? He says, actually, this is I deserve this. He sees, there's a whole story we've been speaking about in the Bhagavatam, about Dhruva Maharaj. Well, it's a long story. If I start it, it'll go for quite some time. But the whole point is that Dhruva Maharaj became very angry. He saw others as his enemy. He saw his own father and his stepbrother, his enemies. And he became, because he was seeing things that from that perspective, and he was a kshatriya by nature, he became so determined to get back, to get vengeance because of that seeing as an enemy. And he was told that if you want to be able to sit on your father's lap and get a kingdom better than your great-grandfather's, then you'll have to go to God, because only God can give you that. So he said, well, how do I get to God? And he became so determined by that anger, he was given instructions how to get the darshan of God. And he performed very severe austerities, and his motivation was to see. And after following these austerities of first, he was meditating on the existence of the Lord within his heart, and he performed austerities of stopping to eat. Every 3 days, I think he was eating only a handful of grains, and then for the first month, and then for the second month, every 6 days he would eat some dried leaves and some roots. And then for the third month, he stopped eating altogether and started living off of air. And then he started controlling his breathing, and then he started breathing only once every, I forget how many it was, huh? Every 9 days. And then after his austerities became so severe that he actually began choking the whole universal structure, and the demigods and the upper planetary systems became choked by his austerities. And they went to the Supreme Lord and they said, you know, oh, we don't know what's happening to us, we can't even breathe. And the Lord said, yes, it's Dhruva's performing those austerities. And then he said, well, do something about it. And the Lord said, yeah, he's forcing me to go to him. So because all those austerities and the demigods came to him, and the Lord said, yeah, I'm going to go there. So he came before Dhruva Maharaj, and Dhruva Maharaj finally, who was meditating on the Lord within his heart, he opened his eyes and he saw the same form of the Lord that he saw within his heart was manifested before him. And the Lord told Dhruva, he said, I've come to fulfill your desires. And he told Dhruva right then and there, he said, what's going to happen? The consequences. He said, because Dhruva was so angry, he wanted vengeance. The consequences of those things were that he wanted a kingdom that was better than not only his father, because he was, I should have explained, he's angry at his father because his father wouldn't let him sit on his lap because he didn't take birth from his favorite queen. He had two queens, and she was his favorite queen. He had Suniti and Suruchi. Suniti was his mother. Suruchi was the other. And when his stepbrother Uttama went to sit on his lap, his father immediately accepted him because he was accepting him because Suruchi was present and Suniti wasn't present. And then Dhruva went to sit on his father's lap, and his father didn't accept. And then Suruchi spoke up and she said, no, you can't sit on his lap because you're not my son. And because you're not my son, you don't have the right to sit on his lap. And she said, if you want the right to sit on his lap, then you'll have to worship the Supreme Lord, and maybe in your next life you'll take birth in my womb, and then you can sit on his lap. And the father didn't say anything. Uttanapad just sat there, didn't say anything. So he went back to his mother, Suniti, and explained the whole thing. As his mother, Suniti, told him, he said, actually, it's the truth. She is the more favored queen. And she said to Dhruva, she said, please don't wish anything bad upon them. Because anyone who wishes bad upon anyone else, he'll have to suffer the same consequences that he wished upon them. So don't wish anything. But Dhruva Maharaj was so angry. I was told, yes, I was told that God, I have to go to God. So he wanted to get a kingdom that was better than his father's. So that he would have his own kingdom. And he wanted, not only wanted a kingdom better than his father's, he decided he wanted a kingdom better than his grandfather, who was Svayambhuva Manu. And then he said, no, that's not enough. I want a kingdom even better than Lord Brahma. Because Svayambhuva Manu is the son of Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma is the original creator in the universe. So I want a kingdom even better than his. And he was thinking, he was so angry at his stepbrother and his stepmother. He wanted vengeance against them. And that's why he worshipped the Lord. So after he performed all these austerities, and then the Lord appeared before him, the Lord said, I've come to fulfill your desires. He said, you are going to get a kingdom. And this kingdom, it will be the pole star. It is a planet within this universe where there's no birth or death. And after you rule the kingdom and this planet for so many years, when you leave, you go to that kingdom. And that kingdom's even better than Lord Brahma, because Brahma's planet is death. So he said, I'm going to give you the right. I'm going to give you this kingdom. And then he said afterwards, he said, and as far as your stepmother and your brother are concerned, your stepbrother is going to go into the forest and he's going to be killed. And your mother, stepmother, out of lamentation, is going to go into the forest looking for him. And she's going to be consumed by a forest fire. He'll be killed. She'll be killed. And then the Lord said, that's it. And then he left. And then Dhruva Maharaj was realizing that out of my anger, because I wasn't seeing things in the proper perspective, I was seeing even my own family members as enemies. Because I was so blinded by my anger, I didn't see things from the proper perspective. And now the result is that even though I was able to achieve the darshan of the Supreme Lord and get a benediction from him, he was thinking, he was miserable. He says, because the Lord only remembered the things that I wanted before when I was so conditioned. And the only thing he told me when he came here is how he's going to fulfill those desires. My stepmother and my stepbrother are going to die and I'm going to get a kingdom better than my grandfather's. But I could have had so much more. The Lord was here, but I could have had so much more. And he was lamenting. Because he didn't see things from the proper perspective. He was blinded by his anger. And then he was thinking, you know, I could have had a personal relationship with the Lord. I could have had a personal, but there was no personal relationship because he just gave me the things that I wanted. And didn't have the opportunity to have a relationship with him, although I could have had everything. And he was in so much lamentation, he was suffering, feeling so much angry at himself. And that's when he made the famous statement. He said, I've come here looking for a piece of broken glass and I found the most valuable jewel. I was coming here for a kingdom, piece of broken glass. But now I have the Supreme Lord, but now he's gone. So, spiritual vision, intelligence means to see things from the proper perspective. And the proper perspective is that a devotee doesn't see friends or enemies. He sees everyone as living entities, spiritual sparks, and quality one with the Lord. He doesn't see anybody as his enemy. And therefore he can be equal to everyone. And therefore, Krishna is glorifying these qualities of a devotee. He's saying, yes, my devotee is very dear to me because he's fixed on the transcendental platform. He's always equal in happiness and distress. He's always a friend towards all living beings. Ajata Shatru. This is a symptom of a sadhava. Titikshava Kurunika Suhrida Savadehina. Ajata Shatava Sadhava Sarabhushanam. The symptoms of a sadhu is that he's tolerant, he's merciful, he's friendly towards all living beings. He's compassionate. Right? He sees everything from the proper perspective, because he sees Krishna, sees everything connected to Krishna, and therefore with such a transcendental intelligence and perspective, he lives in this world, but transcendental to this world. This is his knowledge, which is vijnana, realized knowledge. So therefore, the whole process of Krishna's teachings in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna was to bring him to the platform of vijnana, realized knowledge, not just theoretical knowledge. And therefore his conclusion, after he gives all his instructions in Bhagavad Gita, he comes to the conclusion, the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion, surrender unto me, I'll deliver you from all sinful reactions. He's asking Arjuna to now surrender to me and perform your duties with your mind and activities dedicated to me, your intelligence fixed in me. He says, you will come to me. And then he concludes by telling Arjuna, he says, now that I've revealed all this to you, now you do what you wish to do. He gives Arjuna the choice. Although he's God, he says, now you have your own choice. Every living being has his own choice. It's God-given. But now that you have this knowledge, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to waste it in foolish mundane pursuits? At being on the mundane platform, seeing only matter and not seeing the spiritual side? Or now, after hearing this knowledge by me, are you going to act on the spiritual platform? And therefore he said to Arjuna, now you decide what you want to do. Of course, Arjuna decided. And what did he do? He acted according to his duties, which of course is another whole topic in of itself. He fought in the battle. Battlefield of Kurukshetra. And he was forced to kill even those who were his friends previously. That's a whole subject of Bhagavad Gita. Our understanding is that the Lord's purpose was being fulfilled ultimately, and everyone who was killed in the battlefield actually derived spiritual benefit. And battle had to take place, although by the efforts of the Lord and by the efforts of the Pandavas, all efforts were made to avoid the battle. But because the Kauravas were so bent on fighting, Pandavas had to fight to protect religious principles. They had to. And therefore, Arjuna, with his newfound realized knowledge, as given to him directly from the Supreme Lord, he performed his duty in full Krishna consciousness and achieved full perfection as a result of that knowledge. So this is intelligence and knowledge. We didn't get to discuss the other topics, but we can discuss them some other time, maybe when I come back for the next Sunday lecture. We'll read these: freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, nonviolence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame, and infamy, all these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone. Any questions, comments? Yes, feel it.
When you said that until we free ourselves of this envy, that we won't make any spiritual progress. What is the best way that we can possibly overcome this envy that we have?
The best way to overcome envy is through service. Yes, the root cause of envy is, we don't want to accept that there's somebody who's superior to us. And because envious means that because they're superior to us, I want to bring them down so that I can be above them. That's a symptom of envy. Envy means if I see somebody superior, somebody has something that I don't have, and I want it, one way of getting it is I'm going to do it better than they are. Another way is to push them down and I look better than them. To minimize them. It's a symptom of envy. So, how to overcome that envy? Service. Not just service, but service in the proper consciousness. Services which are performed with a devotional mentality, with the aim to please. So that's why Rupa Goswami gives in his explanation of bhakti, he says that that devotional service must be rendered with the aim to satisfy the object. But the intent is to satisfy, to please. That service rendered on that, with that attitude, clears the heart from envy. And there are so many examples in the Bhagavatam, actually. It's like if you read the whole story of Prajapati Daksha and how he was envious of Lord Shiva, and the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, he was envious of Lord Shiva, although Lord Shiva was much spiritual. Prajapati Daksha was envious because he thought he was in a better position because he thought he was Shiva's father-in-law because he was married to Daksha's daughter. No, excuse me. Yeah, Parvati. So he was thinking, because Shiva's married to my daughter, I'm in a superior position. But he didn't accept Lord Shiva for his superior position. So he, being envious of Lord Shiva, he cursed him, insulted him. And then several chapters have described all the insults and curses that went back and forth, between all the followers of Lord Shiva and the followers of Daksha, and how the sacrifice was destroyed, and many people were punished, and then how Daksha decided to perform another sacrifice, but this time he didn't invite Lord Shiva, and Parvati, his wife, she wanted to go, and he said, don't go, but Parvati was just insistent, I know I have to go, and Lord Shiva says, but if you go, you'll see how envious they are of me, and you'll be, destroyed. So best you not go, but she couldn't accept the good advice of her husband. And she went anyways. And when she saw how envious they were of Lord Shiva, then what happened is she became so intolerant of the behavior of her father, she said, I don't even want to have any connection with you whatsoever. And she gave up her body in his presence. And then when Lord Shiva heard about that, and he punished them all. And then what happened is that after they were punished, then Daksha realized that, that Lord Shiva, is greater than me. And he approached Lord Shiva with a very humble, submissive service attitude and approached him. And Lord Shiva, as soon as he saw Lord Shiva, immediately all his envy just went away from his heart. And Lord Shiva immediately forgave him. Because that's a symptom of a saintly person. The person doesn't see anyone as an enemy. Immediately forgave him. So because of that change of attitude that Daksha had towards Lord Shiva, which was previously based on envy, his envy was eradicated from his heart to appreciating his qualities, recognizing Lord Shiva's greatness, serving him, and offering prayers to him, and then envy was eradicated. So that's one example in the Bhagavatam. There are many other examples. But the point is, service. It's the only way. Yes.
When Krishna says, when Krishna tells Arjuna that Arjuna is not envious of him, because he's talking to Arjuna as if they were two friends, right?
Well, previously he was talking, they were friends.
Yeah, but what I mean is that nobody in his right mind could possibly be envious of Krishna, right? How could we be envious of...
Nobody in their right mind? That's right. To be envious of Krishna is not the right mind. Your statement is correct. But unfortunately, there are a lot of people not in the right mind. Because Krishna... when people begin to hear about Krishna, who's Krishna? Well, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Not only is the supreme enjoyer, he's the supreme controller. He's the supreme proprietor. He has everything. Not only that, but Krishna doesn't have to do anything. He just enjoys. Now, they look at themselves and say, hey, wait a minute. Why is he just enjoying, and why am I having to work so hard just to get a little pleasure like this? And he's only enjoying. He doesn't have to do anything. Now, imagine like just a mundane example. You're working really hard, and you know this person that's like right from his birth, everything was handed to him on a silver spoon. Okay? Doesn't even know what work is, you know. He's chauffeured everywhere in a Rolls Royce, you know, guards, servants, everything, and you know, and you're working so hard, and you know, and he's just like, according to the mundane perception, he's just enjoying. He doesn't even have to work. He's like, you become envious, you know. Why does, you know, he's. Why do I have to work so hard? And look at how hard I'm working. And what to speak of when you come in connection with him and he might make a statement to you like, you know, I'm superior than you are. Well, Krishna says, I'm superior than all of you. That's Krishna's position. And not only that, he says, I want everything from you. He doesn't say, I want your money. It doesn't say, you know, I want some time. Krishna says, I have everything, but I want you to give everything to me. And here's a guy who's got everything, but he wants you to give not just your time, and he's saying, I want everything. Now, aren't you going to feel a little envious? He wants everything from you. He's got everything, and he wants everything. What do I have? I have a poultry to compare to what he has, and he wants it. You're going to be envious unless you know Krishna. Unless you know why Krishna is asking for that. Unless you know that Krishna actually doesn't really care about what he's asking from you. He only wants your love. But if you don't know that about Krishna, you're going to be envious when he says, give me everything. Therefore, those who are in the right mind, they won't be envious. But so many people are in the wrong mind. So you're right. Anyone in their right mind won't be envious of Krishna.
You were talking about MIT, and I think that whole world of academia is very much not in the right mind. And they're envious of Krishna so much that they deny God. I mean, to me, that's, they aren't even including God in their models of how things work. So it's worse than just that they don't look at a dead man versus a live man. They're just, like, they want to be God.
Yeah.
So they want to learn how to.
That's exactly what Prabhupada says.
Yeah. And they want to.
They want to be God. They want to prove that we don't need God, that we'll take care of everything. Just science. We'll take care of it. We'll solve all the problems with science. Who needs God?
Some of the great scientists have believed in God, but it hasn't really been told to us, you know, like Einstein. But all we hear is the real materials.
Yeah, there are certainly creationists.
The other thing I thought about, that word confidence that you used today, and part of this is because my name is Faith, and that word, the F-I-D part in there is a root that means faith, confidence. I think it means with faith. So when you tell somebody something that's precious to you, you have this kind of faith that they're, you can trust them with it. So
yes.
I thought that was interesting. I was just thinking that as you were talking with that word and using it, talking about with the conditions that you would confide. I mean, it doesn't maybe literally mean something secret, the word itself. It's more the attitude, if you're looking at, to look at the word like that with faith.
But it, so yeah, but if the faith is there, then the secrets can be revealed.
Right, it's like a condition.
Okay. I'm going to end here, if that's with your permission. Time for art. I have to leave tonight. I have to go back to New Jersey. So I have to drive 2.5 hours. So I don't want to go too late. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Prabhupada ki
jai.
Sri Vandana Swami ki
jai.
Prema Premana.